Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. This is our big end of the year pod, even though we are already at the beginning of the next year. But we are here to talk about the top 10 films of 2015. And this is a four-person pod from West Coast to East Coast. We got the heavy hitters here. So starting in the Pacific time zone, in Los Angeles, California, we've got Aaron Alvarado with the Los Angeles Times. Aaron, thanks for coming on.
Hey, fellas. How you doing?
Oh, this is like around the horn.
Yeah. This is very much like around the horn.
I want to be Woody Page.
How do I mute Skylar?
I am J.A. Adonde, obviously.
Oh, no. Really? I was going to be... Oh, you beat me to it.
I'm that really cool girl that like always wins, but she's like a total badass.
Oh,
I can't
great.
Remember her name though, which is really
Brian,
bad of me.
Brian, you lost way too much around the horn. Okay,
that sounds so sexist right now. You don't know the name of the female.
I think that leaves me as that Denver Post guy. That's
Woody
really
Page.
Old.
F yeah, Woody that's... Page. Can I say F Woody Page?
Yeah.
I think Skylar already claimed Woody Page.
If we're gonna be honest, did he? Skylar, if he's Woody
it's
Page,
it's because I have that funny thing written behind me that people that are listening to this can't see.
You're an anti-Mormon bigot, Woody Page.
So, oh, is he? Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Okay, we just got political. All right.
Yeah, that didn't take very long. I literally got through one of four intros.
Okay. Sorry.
So I'm in Salt Lake City, obviously Mountain Standard Time Zone. In the Central Time Zone in Texas, a man who needs no introduction.
Well, you just have to say my name. Like, you just have to introduce me that way.
The deal was I was going to stop there, man. You were supposed to pick it up.
What's up, guys? Tonight's episode presented by Arby's and their new loaded cheese fries. They're good. But not for you. They just taste good. But, you know, thanks to Arby's and, for loaded cheese fries.
On the East Coast, living in the RVA, Mr. B-Mort, making his second appearance in the pod. Thanks. Thanks for joining us in a much later time.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate being included in this elite group of stone-faced killers.
Speaking of stone-faced killers, making a murderer. Stephen Avery, a stone-faced killer. No.
I'm just going to go ahead and say it, guys. He did the original rape.
No, I don't think so. I don't think he did it.
I think that Brendan was the mastermind behind the whole thing.
To be clear, I don't believe in DNA evidence. And I actually don't believe in it.
Yeah.
The sheriff did not believe that he didn't commit it, right? The sheriff was convinced that he still had done that original one.
Yeah. Look, you got to imagine that the police department at Manawak County or whatever, their lives right now, they're having a pretty bad time.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Ken Kratz is having a bad day.
Yeah. Well, he's got texting, anymore. You know, so...
He's got
have you seen video from him recently? He's got really white hair and looks even creepier than he did before. I don't know how you can become creepier, but Ken Kratz has managed to become.
Have
creepier.
You seen the shorter defense attorney that had the glasses? He looks fat now. Like he's put on weight. Like this.
But he seemed like
him.
His life was about to fall apart. That whole case, he was super depressed.
Can I just say that my favorite character in the entire series was the sketch artist who framed his sketching?
That's the sheriff. That's the guy that orchestrated all this.
He might have.
It was his wife. It was his wife who had the thing.
I wish that he would sell copies of that on Etsy or something.
That's probably that's not even funny because it's scary how he would that might happen now.
Can we make that a t-shirt?
I'll buy one.
I'll get a Ken Kratz shirt. If it had just a Ken Kratz face on it, I'd wear it.
Well, it's crazy you mention that because dawnofthethread.com actually has the exclusive Ken Kratz t-shirts right now. If you go to www.dawnofthethread.com, you can have one too.
is this one of those real fake sponsorships that
No. Dawnofthethread.com is real, and they're not going to appreciate that I said that.
Brian, shut your mouth. Shut up.
No, Dawn of the Thread is actually Aaron's brother's t-shirt business.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's real.
Okay. Well, then you could get someone to make your thing.
Oh. Don't think that there's going to be a whole making a murderer line.
Oh, yeah. Clearly.
Yeah, I want a Brendan shirt.
They have a shirt that kind of looks like Ken Kratz. It's called To Serve Man. So it's $15.99. Go check it out. Buy two. One for you, one for your mom. Great deal.
Yeah.
Or get the hoodie.
Oh, wow. Well, we're talking
movies.
We're talking about Making a Murderer, obviously, because it's enormous right now. Everyone, it seems like, binge-watched that show over the course of this past weekend. And so I'm glad we're able to have some humor, because otherwise it's a series that obviously caused me to be very outraged and literally physically ill. I just really want to forget it. I want to forget that Brendan Dassey is sitting in a jail cell right now till 2048.
He doesn't know that he's in a jail cell. He thinks at any moment his mom will come get him and they'll go home.
Hey, Brendan, are you in a jail cell?
He still thinks he's going to be able to make that last period class to turn in that project.
You know what would be really awesome is in the next WrestleMania, he makes an appearance. That would be a mic drop appearance by him.
He becomes a heel. Like, he's the heel in the next WrestleMania.
I was thinking about that the whole time. I thought, like, yeah, this sucks you, Brendan, but if someone can tell him in 2048, there's a 100% chance that WrestleMania will allow him to be on, like, that would give him something to hold on to, you know?
Okay, so here's how it opens. Like, you know, you have one wrestler who's chained arms and legs.
Stop.
That's not funny. That's terrible. Well, it's not even that funny, because it's not a real thing. It's a completely made up thing.
It's a made up thing.
Well, his finishing move involves hair cutting, so.
Yeah.
The wrestler just goes, hey, Brendan, do you want to cut your hair? Yeah.
You guys remember the Claymation Deathmatch? Do you remember that on MTV, the Deathmatch?
The celebrity deathmatches?
That is something that I wish was still around for this. That'd be great.
If you have Claymation skills, please create the Brendan Massey at WrestleMania, what was it, like 95? And 2048, where he comes out.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding, though. Ever since Making a Murderer, almost every single phone call that I've received, I answer with going, yeah? And then whatever they say next, I respond with, yeah? Either as a question or, yeah, as a non-question. Because that's literally the beginning of every phone conversation.
Hey, Brendan, do you like your lawyer? Yeah. Is he good at his job? Yeah. Do you guys get along?
We like the same animal.
We do. He likes cats, too. Guys, let's stop making him. He's handicapped.
That was
this
sad.
Is so sad.
The animal comment actually made me really sad.
I got really sad about that.
Speaking of attorneys, though, like, how much bank are Stephen Avery's, his defense attorneys are going to make now? Because they were the heroes of the second half of that season.
Yeah, they did such a great job defending him.
Yeah. Like, your dad's a lawyer, B-Mort. My dad is decidedly not.
Yeah, so, I think that the defense attorneys probably would rather have won their cases and been famous.
Oh,
for
I'm not
that.
Saying rather. I'm not saying they're happy. I'm not saying that rather. I'm just saying, I would expect an influx of business they would have otherwise not had, because they performed in a really very theatrical way that was very easy for people to get behind them.
Wow.
Yeah, if you want two lawyers who are really cool, but juries hate them, hire these guys. 0-for-1.
Yeah, I don't care about juries. I don't care about that.
Man.
Anyway, I thought they did a pretty good job. It sounds like I might be alone in that opinion.
If any of those 12 jury members listen to the podcast, call us. We'll do a podcast with you. We want to talk about what it was like to be on that jury.
Yeah.
See if there was any sort of pressure
going
on. Yeah,
that's good. That's an open invitation. Yeah.
Because I feel like we have a lot of listeners in that part of Wisconsin.
We do.
We're big there.
Yeah, Manitowoc County is definitely one of ours.
It's mostly in the sheriff's department, though. That's the problem.
Well, Ken Kratz loves us. We always get emails from Ken.
Tons of emails.
I like the Brave Little Podcast. I really like that toaster. It's a nice
that
looking
toaster's
toaster.
Real
I tell
cute.
You what, that toaster's looking nice.
Something about that toaster.
All right. Let's get into this. We've got a few things to go over. This is going to be a two-parter episode. So this episode, we're going to be going starting at number 10. We're going to talk about our 10 through 6 films. Before we get to that, we're all going to go around and say what we thought was the worst film of the year that we saw, and our meh film of the year. So since top 10 lists are a funny thing, and criteria is going to, you know, vary wildly between each one of us, I think it'd be helpful if each one of us described how we approached our top 10 in selecting them, so there's some context there. But we're going to start from California and work our way to Virginia. So Worst film that you saw this year, Aaron.
Okay, all right. Starting with the best coast. All right, so the worst film that I saw this year, bar none, was The Martian. I mean, love Matt Damon, but this movie was so terrible. I don't understand why people loved it. I don't understand why it was so popular. I mean, it felt like a rehash of so many other movies. It just, there was nothing original about it. I just didn't get it. But again, I love Matt Damon, respect him. Ridley Scott, he's a great director, but I just don't know what they were doing with this film. Didn't work for me at all.
So it didn't take long for this podcast to get controversial. So, Aaron, I have to hide my Martian feelings because I get scared that I'm in danger because people love this movie so much. But people were tricked into thinking this was a good movie. And so I it's not the worst film of the year by any stretch, in my opinion.
For me, it hurt my soul watching it.
It hurt your soul.
Yeah, well, you know, I actually had high expectations going into it. Ridley Scott, Matt Damon, Jessica Chastain, it had some great actors in it, and it just completely fumbled for me.
But he does the Iron Man thing at the end. He's like Iron Man.
God. Yeah?
I think that...
Yeah, no, nothing worked for me in that movie.
It wasn't... I think it's a pretty derivative movie. Like, it won't be making an appearance in my top 10, but I don't know that I guess if you went in with really high expectations, it could be. How is Skyler getting the like?
I think Skyler disagrees.
Yeah. Skyler, yeah. Would you like to counter?
Yeah, Skyler.
No, I'll wait for my number one movie.
Okay. Oh, stop. I do think that a lot of it reminded me too much of Interstellar, and it felt like stylistically a lot like Interstellar.
Well, what about Castaway? Felt like Castaway too.
That's a good point. Yeah, I think people love science. I think that the people who love science so much that when it gets even a propaganda movie for science, which I think this was.
Oh, it was, you know, yeah.
And it appealed to a lot of dumb people that people love science for dumb people. So.
Yes. So much so that Matt Damon literally says, I'm going to science the crap out of this. Science, he science, sure science. Does. And it was so over-explaining.
That line wasn't great.
What's that?
But, dude, there's a Boromir joke. Like, there was a solid Boromir joke.
Oh, it had moments.
Like, that moment alone rescues it from being worst film of the year. Like,
it was too long. I'll agree that it was... On screen. I mean, it was too long.
Making a joke about Lord of the Rings.
Way too long. Yeah.
See, I would say that's the best moment of the film, the Lord of the Rings part. But beyond that, there's just nothing there for me.
It's not like a terribly made film, and I would never argue that it is. For me, it was the fact that we had Interstellar last year, which I think is like a masterpiece, and I think it's one of the best sci-fi films in over a decade.
Agreed.
And the fact that too many people hated that film and were repulsed by it, and I almost take weird personal offense to that, the way people disliked Interstellar, and a lot of the same people just completely ate up The Martian, and it made me upset that people would flock to that movie yet reject Interstellar when there's a clear better film here. And I know that's not a fair way to approach it. It's not a fair way to think about it. But that's just how I responded.
Feel like Damon was just in that suit from Interstellar. And was like, do we want to film like a whole movie? Because I can be in the suit the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. But
whatever. Let's move on.
So yeah, that was my worst film.
Oh, Skyler. Since when was Skyler the one to move the podcast along?
Yeah. Oh. Frustrated. Hey, David. What's your worst?
My worst is this is such a terrible movie. It's a Will Ferrell, Kevin Hart comedy called Get Hard. Is the worst movie I saw, and it's not even close. It sucked so bad. I don't even have to explain why. For those who have seen it, know why. For those who haven't, just avoid it. It's not funny. It's actually
Is it what you'd classify under like a black comedy? I could never
get a read on whether or not.
Whoa, hey, that's
come on
not,
now.
That's not me being racist. That's like what they call it. It's like when they release it, they call it a black comedy. I don't know.
I know you're trying to ask, be more. This was not a Tyler Perry film. What?
No, that it's like a real. This is
please
like a
don't
real
use
genre.
That word to describe Kevin Hart.
Netflix always asks me like if you liked other of these black comedies, you know.
And then what's funny about
that... It does. That, I'll send you a screenshot.
It says that, and then it'll have a thumbnail for, like, the Royal Tenenbaums, which is just a white family and, like, Danny Glover.
Well, it's a black comedy because it's dark. I'm not sure what
I know. I know.
Black
comedy does have nothing
I'm
to do with
right
ethnicity
I'm
or race. Okay.
Sorry. Yeah, I did not realize that I was not trying to be offensive.
Oh, yeah. No, Yeah.
The Kevin Hart army is going to come for you.
Aaron is a man of color, so he gets a little sensitive with these things.
Yeah. Sorry.
Get Hard doesn't deserve any more time on this podcast. I will say the other films in contention for this for me were Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, which is a terrible film. Truth with Robert Redford and Kate Blanchett, a completely ill-advised, poorly made film. The Good Dinosaur and Jupiter Ascending.
Boo.
So,
boo.
But Jupiter Ascending is the one on that list that actually I might take off because it has this weird endearing. It's so terrible that it's funny quality. But
I kind of enjoyed it. I watched it on a plane, but I kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's not as bad as people say it is, except for Eddie Redmayne. He's terrible. Skyler.
I'm Eddie Redmayne. I just won an Oscar. I can do anything. Yeah, actually, he won the Oscar after he filmed that. But anyway, I just want to apologize to my friend Michael, who Martian was one of his top 10 movies of the year. So I'm sure that listening to the last 5 minutes has been very aggravating for him. And I think he loved Get Hard. And so this is really hard for him. He just loves Kevin Hart. He just gets it. Get Hard is a really bad movie, but I'm going to say Avengers 2 was my worst movie of the year. It was an incoherent mess. Yeah. It didn't make any sense. The plot was hard to follow. The characters were useless and, like, unlikable. And the new characters introduced were not established. And it's just an awful movie. Like, and it was just a cash grab. Like, I really hope that we don't see Disney do this with Star Wars, where we just kind of, like... Because, the movies are getting worse and worse.
It is worrisome.
But, I think it's an interesting problem to have because I don't think they intended for the Avengers to become as bloated as it was. And so their problem is that they have too many good characters that can't share the screen and possibly have like their own. Like if they're all there, there has to be kind of ridiculous things for that to be the case. So I do think that like the individual movies have caused these big blockbusters to happen. But I'm also worried that that's going the other direction and that Captain America Civil War will be more like this Avengers movie and just be bloated and kind of overdone and not really understandable and incoherent. But I agree. It's not a great showing.
Oh, did we need another Olsen sister, though? Like, I mean, she was just so bad.
Is she our last hope?
She's the last one who hasn't gotten into cocaine yet.
Okay. Yeah. You don't know that.
Still or killed Heath Ledger.
Let's wait for Fuller House to make judgment on
that. Yeah, yeah.
Did I kill Heath Ledger on that, too?
So, all right, let's go to B-Mort, your worst film. And then also, B-Mort, if you want to tell us your meh film, and then we'll swing back around to Aaron's meh film.
Okay. My worst film of this year was Cinderella.
Oh.
Which I think is bad in a couple reasons, but I think, first of all, it's a fairy tale where female characters are acted upon and do not make their own decisions. And I think that everyone's very uncomfortable with this. You guys agree that it was a good movie?
Dude, it's 20th on my list.
It's on my top 25.
Oh, that's such BS. It's a garbage movie. I think that it's a cash cow. Disney is picking princesses in order to go back to. And this was not very well done and not a good story to regurgitate because she makes zero decisions the entire movie, and everything just happens to her. She's a passive female character. So that's why
it
sounds like Star Wars.
I disagree completely, Brian. She was in the attic.
Okay, well.
She was in the attic, and she made a decision to go to that ball. Like, that was her own. She was told she couldn't go,
no,
but she said, F it. I'm going
and
to
then
the ball.
A magical fairy godmother.
Dude,
the problem is with the story originally.
That's part of her imagination.
It wasn't
that's
very
really
well
happening. That was her imagination. The mice that she's talking to her imagination, this is just all part of her mind. Like, in her mind, she's seeing those things, but it's not really happening. Those things don't exist.
It's like an Inception theory of Cinderella.
Sounds like Fight Club.
It is like Fight Club, yeah.
So, see, for me, Cinderella, I was so grateful to see a film that empowers women, a film that my daughters can watch and, like,
boo.
Have a role model.
Don't show your daughters that movie.
When are we getting the live-action Little Mermaid?
Soon, and it... Well,
dude,
not that one is
R,
also
though.
A problematic one.
Dude, it's way more problematic than Cinderella.
Yeah, like her abusive dad. Anyways.
Dude, the morals in that movie. 10 hours. Okay, let's go.
So what was your meh film?
My meh film of 2015? Yeah, 2015 was Black Mass, which I really wanted to enjoy, and I think stylistically very cool, and some of the deaths are awesome. But I came away not knowing what the movie wanted me to feel, and I think that's kind of damning for a moral cautionary tale, you know, like, don't show me gangster stuff unless you want to teach me something, or else it's just gangster stuff. So I think substance lacking over just stylistic decisions, so that was my meh film of 2015.
It wasted a good Joel Edgerton performance and a rare good Johnny Depp performance, even though that makeup and the eye, like, they had some issues there.
He did a good job, I think.
I agree, yeah. I that's not my meh film, but of the list of ones I wrote out, like my short list for meh, it's on it, so I agree with everything you just said.
Guys, hold the phone on Johnny Depp. One of his other movies this year definitely made my top 10, so just keep thinking about that.
Mordecai!
Ooh, he's so funny in that movie, guys! Ooh. Okay. I'm
so, all right, Skyler. Yeah. Actually, yeah, let's run it back to Aaron. Aaron's meh film.
Why are we skipping over Skyler?
Yeah, let's go to Skyler. Yeah.
We went full circle, man. It's like the snake draft. Is that how it works? No, it's not.
No, snake draft would go back to Skyler.
Yeah. Okay, all right, Skyler. Sorry, Skyler. I apologize. My apologies.
I get it. You just want another person of color talking.
Can't blame him for that.
You can't. I get it. Okay, my meh film of 2015 was A Farewell to One of All of Our Favorite Actors, Mr. Philip Seymour Hoffman himself, Hunger Games 3 Part 2.
Wow.
That's a meh film?
Wow. That's giving a lot of credit. Film.
That was in competition for the worst. Yeah, me so too. Bad.
Me too.
It just did nothing for me. I didn't hate it. I mean, you have like so many talented actors and actresses in that movie, and they just don't even care. None of them cared. Philip Seymour Hoffman was just trying to get a cast so he could get some more heroin.
It reminded me of the prequels in Star Wars, in that every character told you exactly what they intended. Yeah. I am feeling torn. I am feeling confident.
Now I got to see this movie. It sounds wonderful.
Yeah, when her little sister dies, I think we're all just kind of like, good. Good. That movie.
So anyways, well, she was the one who kicked off the mess from the very beginning, right? She should have just volunteered like she was picked and not let her sister, you know?
Right. I don't think we'd have to deal with it. Like, so many more people would not have died if that little sister would have just been a little trooper and taken one for the team.
Yeah.
What a jerk. She's pretty much Hitler. Okay, go on.
All right, so it's me now. So my meh is Aloha, Cameron Crowe's film that was fairly poorly received. And really, for all intents and purposes, incoherent mess of a story. Not actually very well filmed either, but Cameron Crowe just got just enough famous people and buddies to hang out in Hawaii for a couple weeks to make a movie that it creates some scenes that are actually kind of enjoyable, that are all right, even if they don't make sense at all with the rest of the film. It had its moments that I was like, meh. I mean, I didn't. It's not a good movie.
You literally said meh.
Yeah,
you're watching
I literally
it.
Did several times throughout the film. I was like, meh. I mean, this is not a good movie, but it's not like terrible. I don't hate this. It had its moments. It was okay. It didn't make sense.
Offensive.
I mean, other films I consider were Spectre, Age of Ultron, The Walk, Focus, Poltergeist remake, Ant-Man, Pawn Sacrifice, Concussion, Black Mass. All right.
Darren.
So back to me. All right. So my meh film of 2015 was Black Cat. This is a movie. This is another movie that I had high expectations for. Directed by Michael Mann, legendary film director. Chris Hemsworth. He's an okay actor. Whatever. Fine. But this movie itself was just so straightforward, boring. I don't understand. I couldn't. Honestly, I didn't even finish it. I have it on my DVR, and there's 5 minutes left, and I'm never gonna watch those last 5 minutes. I don't care how it ended. There's just nothing about the movie that was appealing at all. This is a movie about a hacker. I guess he's helping the U.S. government find out, or he's helping the Chinese or something figure out someone hacked
into. That's all we need to know.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't. It's so convoluted and stupid.
I'm getting bored listening to that.
Yeah, there's been a million other hacker movies that are better, such as Hackers, The Net, Matrix. So yeah,
Mr. Robot.
So yeah, Search Black. That's there you go. Black Cat is just completely meh. Wanted to love it, didn't even like it a little.
Wow.
What was that hacker movie from like 10 years ago where like the bad guy is Bill Gates, essentially?
It's called Antitrust.
Yep.
Antitrust.
Yeah, it's with Ryan Felipe and Tim Robbins.
Ooh, Tim Robbins plays Bill Gates. I forgot that.
Mm. Terrible movie.
It's awful. Yeah. All right. Well, let's launch into our top, our 10 through 6, and we'll just keep this formula. Aaron,
all right. We're going to have you go. My number
10. But before you tell your number 10, I want you to talk about kind of how you approached the criteria.
So, yeah, my criteria for picking my top 10 is entertainment. That's number one for me. Okay. These are the movies that were the most entertaining for me. It could be story, it could be visual, it could be characters, or just scenes that really stood out. There are a lot of good movies this year. Pretty strong year altogether. For my number 10, I have Best of Enemies, which is a documentary that I saw on Netflix. I saw it about a month ago, actually. And it's all about the 1968 televised debates between Gore Vidal and William F. Buckley, which sounds like a very fascinating and exciting topic. But it actually turns out to be a really good movie, really compelling. They go into the backstory of why these two guys hated each other, and they absolutely did hate each other. They were both brilliant, brilliant writers, and just two people that were completely on the top of their game in this debate. And it kind of changed the way that television is presented, especially news television, even to this day. So it's a really important moment in TV history, and the documentary itself is really well made. It's very entertaining, and I have it as my number 10.
Awesome.
What was the name of that again?
It's called Best of Enemies, and it's on Netflix right now. Yep.
Yeah, I actually just watched it this weekend. It's really fascinating. Yeah. And to a lot of your points, it really is the birth of the like kind of the MSNBC Fox News style of completely partisan reporting.
What I found interesting is when you hear them talk about the state of the country in 1968, they're saying the exact same things that they're saying on the TV today.
Yep.
It's wild. It's so funny.
The argument has not changed.
No, not even slightly.
Also, the way those two dudes can talk was slightly nauseating.
Yeah, amazing. You know what I also found funny was they hated each other and they wanted to kill each other, but they were totally cordial. They didn't necessarily yell over each other. They kind of just made their point and then moved on.
Yeah.
Until he made a gay joke at the end there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a bit of a twist in the film. I believe it's in the mid 90s on Rotten Tomatoes. So it's like very well reviewed, but yeah, check it out on Netflix. That is there.
Number 10.
It takes place in the 60s?
Yeah, 1968.
Yeah.
So back in the 60s it was offensive if you didn't make gay jokes though, right?
There weren't
things were just very different.
There weren't gays. I don't think there were gays back then in 68.
No. Mm-mm. No, actually, I think that was the first year.
Oh, in 68 that they started putting it in our milk and making us gay?
This debate was the start of that.
Yeah.
So they saw an openly gay man on TV and they said, cool.
That makes sense with Ellen DeGeneres' timeline.
Oh gosh!
Ellen DeGeneres' timeline as a gay man.
I will cue up the Looney Tunes music. Like I'll do it.
That wasn't even that bad.
No, it wasn't. Okay, all right. I'm gonna get to my 10. My criteria, it's not consistent, unfortunately, and I wish I could lie to you and tell you that it is. I did approach it from, like, 2015. If I could have a time capsule of the films that, I feel like both represent the year, but also films that I really, really love. It's a combination. It's kind of like I tried to come up with, this is the first year where I tried to have some sort of numbering system, which was completely ineffective, where I applied in several different categories how I felt about a lot of different films. And so if it was like a tie in a certain spot, the win would go to whichever one I enjoyed more or I thought was more entertaining or more rewatchable. But what that ended up happening for the end was I have a tie for number 10, and I know, boo, it's breaking the rules, whatever. This is my podcast. I've got
two. you're gonna list more than one movie.
Yeah, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah,
I'm gonna do it.
You can't. You prescribe the format, but you can't follow it.
And you're gonna listen. You're gonna listen to what they are.
Yeah. Okay.
My name's on the podcast too, David.
What's that?
My name's on the podcast too, not just
your
podcast.
But you're co-creator, so he can say his, and it's not offensive to you.
Yeah.
Person with
man, I feel like that person on that created Google with the other guy that nobody cares about.
No, they're still partners. They're still there. Still no one got there. Screwed out of it. Larry and Sergey, they're still there. Not yeah. a good
thing. If you want me to call you 68? Eduardo Saverin, I will.
You should have done Eduardo. Yeah, go to Eduardo and Mark. Come on.
Yeah.
I don't know who these people are. Sergey is really his name?
Sergey. No, dude, don't even worry about who these people are. I think of Eduardo Saverin as the guy that played Spider-Man. Really good looking. People, okay. Girls love him. So you're gonna get spot. So my number 10 is a tie between Mission Impossible 5, Rogue Nation, and Mad Max Fury Road.
That's so low for it is, how much it, you talked about yeah. loving that movie.
So, yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, B-more. I loved Mad Max Fury Road. It came out in the first half of the year, or close to it, which was a dearth of films in the first half of 2015. And so,
yeah, but the way you and Skylar talked about it was like the second coming of movie making.
So
yeah.
I think you're confusing.
Don't show us your list. Just
don't do it.
Have
don't
some
do it,
patience,
Skylar,
bro.
it's Mad Max Fury Road is an incredibly well-made film. It's got an art direction and a vision that's committed to, and it executes perfectly. Is it the type of film I'd want to pop in and watch all the time? For me, no. Do I think it's a little bit of a drag that they had to turn around and go right back to where they came from? Yes. Was it
Wait,
feminist
I haven't seen the movie.
Enough for me? No.
Spoiled.
I'm just kidding.
spoil the movie on a movie review podcast?
That's not spoiling the movie.
No, I agree. I'm not. I'm agreeing with you that it's you can't have an expectation of not talking about the movie. Come on.
Yeah. No. There's no way people are listening to this. Like, there's no way. Anyway, I it's a really, really well-made film. I do think Tom Hardy has some issues. These are all small things, but it just wasn't my, like, wasn't the type of film that I gravitate towards like a lot of people did, and it resonated with so many people. I've read list upon list, and Mad Max is in the top three of so many lists. But for me, it cracks at 10. I will tell you about an hour before we started recording, it was at 11. And so So it deserves to be in the time capsule for 2015, but it's just not my type of film that I'd want to watch over and over and over again. Mission Impossible 5, it might be the best popcorn, second best popcorn cinema film of the year. It was so much fun. Yeah, Mission Impossible was amazing, but that was my tie. I wish there wasn't a tie. I wish it would have come out one over the other, but unfortunately we had a tie. So
my qualifications for movies are twofold. The first is how great of a movie it is. And second of all, if it fits with the general theme of the year, which of movie making, which is unexpected storytelling. I think we can all agree that there was a lot of really good unexpected storytelling this year. So that being said, the greatness of the film and then being unexpected. Steve Jobs is my number 10. This was a movie that I would prefer have been higher, and I think had some weaknesses, but was still a really good Sorkin adaptation of the Walter Isaacson biography. I think that it's fun to listen to the dialogue. I think that it's a really well-written movie, even though it is a completely fictional tale. I don't think anyone going in should have expected it to be very accurate. I do think it gets knocked down a little bit because it's a little bit too good at the end. Like, this man is to be worshipped, which is interesting because most people who were negatively reacting to it say that it portrayed him poorly, which I don't agree with. I think it actually gives him kind of a better take than he deserves. But a really good movie and a really fun addition to Aaron Sorkin's catalog.
Great.
Wow. You're number 9.
My number 9? My number 9 is Joy, which is a movie I went in with very low expectations for because I'd heard not very good things. Joy was really, I think, a surreal experience. But I will say that this one bumped up for me because of its strong female characters, which you guys are all really your eyes at. No, she's an empowered female character who has empowered female or passive female characters around her. This is a better version of Cinderella. This is a Cinderella story that you could show your daughters if they are capable of it. So I really like this movie. I think that it stylistically was supposed to be bizarre and surreal, and some people didn't like that, but it really worked for me, the surrealness and weirdness of it. So I thought it really well acted by everyone in the movie, and I think overall good story.
I haven't seen it. I'm glad that made someone's list to talk about it. I haven't actually talked to anyone that's seen it, and it got mixed reviews. And for those of you listening, you obviously can't see, but when we read our movies, we are burdened with having to see a visual reaction from Skylar, which is mostly
taking his shirt up.
Yeah, it's involved removing articles of clothing and obscene gestures, and so it's a test to see if you can, keep a straight face. But we are back to Skylar with his number 9.
So my first movie was a foreign film that came out in 2014 but released in the U.S. in 2015, and my number 9 is the same. This one released in New Zealand in 2014 and then released in the U.S. in 2015. This is What We Do in the Shadows.
Good.
Which, a vampire faux documentary, mockumentary style film. But I've watched it 4 or 5 times now this year, and I really, really, really love it every single time. I'm a big fan of Flight of the Conchords, so Jemaine Clement, he's one of my heroes, and he just he brings in a lot of his funny New Zealand friends. Him and Taika Waititi or whatever, the director, they just do a freaking fantastic job. I think if you haven't seen this movie, it's on iTunes. I think it was on, they had it for the rental of the week. They've had it down to $9.99. Just check it out. It's really good. I think it has a lot of rewatchability. It's funny. They're New Zealanders. It's in New Zealand. So there's
Flight of the Conchords holiday episode.
It's like a Flight of the Conchords holidays.
There's a Halloween episode of Flight of the Conchords.
There's no Brit, but you do get Murray. So, next best thing. And so, yeah, if you like laughing your ass off, this is a movie I think you'll enjoy.
Yeah,
sorry, David's mom.
Very good.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I have to mark it down so I know where to cut.
Thank you.
I'm kidding. Yeah, speaking of Brit, I don't think he's shown his face around those parts since he won his Oscar for the Muppets. I think that's...
Oh, he's too big time now.
Yeah. So my number 9 is... this, to me, the trailer was great, but I did not expect the movie to be great. I really didn't. And it's Ryan Coogler's Creed. Creed was the type of movie, 93% Rotten Tomatoes. This had no business being the 7th film in the Rocky franchise being any good. It was astonishing. There's a lot of parallels made to The Force Awakens in the terms of about how it's very, very iterative of its, the first movie in the franchise. And this is absolutely the same way. But Michael B. Jordan, super charismatic. You get the best Sylvester Stallone performance in years, and he should be nominated for a supporting actor Oscar. It was an incredibly vulnerable performance, and just a really, really fun film. So I really loved it. My number 9 was Creed.
Would you have liked Force Awakens more if Han Solo had cancer and then was just getting treatment the whole movie?
It depends on whether or not the narrator lies to us about whether he dies or not at the end. Like me, Earl and the Dying Girl, because then I would hate it. Sorry.
I'm doing Star Wars spoilers.
I can't get over that movie. All right.
Sorry,
Michael. We are on to Aaron's number 9.
Okay, my number 9, I have the movie Everest was my number 9 movie. And I will tell you, it's my number 9 based solely on one person, Jason Clarke. Exactly. Well, two people now. Jason Clarke and Jake Gyllenhaal. No, I'm a huge, huge, huge Jason Clarke fan. I will watch anything that he's in, and when he's in a movie, it just knocks it up a notch for me. He was definitely the star of this film. He carried it on his back like a Sherpa. And the movie itself was actually one of the better mountain climbing movies I've ever seen. It felt so authentic. Obviously, I've never been to Everest, but so many of the scenes felt like I was actually there. And it made me wonder, how did they pull this off? Which is always a mark of a good movie for me. Everest was number 9 for me. Total rewatchability. I think it's a perfect airplane movie, for sure. And that's where I watched it. So.
Okay. Please tell me that's not your last Jason Clarke movie of the year, though.
Yeah. Terminator Genesis is number 1, right?
Genesis has to be on your list, right?
No spoilers, sorry.
I like when you say you're this huge, huge Jason Clarke fan, because I've never, ever, ever heard anyone say those words ever. And not because he's bad, but because he's one of those actors that's he's good and he's in a lot of stuff, but he's not the type of
underappreciated
actor that people pick as their favorite, you know?
Yeah, completely underappreciated. So
when I first met you, I'll never forget asking you who your favorite actor was, and your response completely shocked me, which was Jason Lee.
Jason Lee. Hell yeah, Jason Lee.
For the Jasons.
Jason Lee. Yeah. Wait a second.
Is that the My Name is Earl guy?
That's correct.
Well, before he made Alvin and the Chipmunks, he was actually an actor.
yeah, well, hold on. Yeah. Road Chip wasn't so bad.
Road Chimp.
It's Road Kimp. All right.
Wait, why is it Road Chip? It's obviously
because
Chip.
It rhymes with it rhymes with trip. With trip.
Yeah, yeah. Chipmunks, they're going on a journey in a car on this road for a long
time. I thought they were chimp monks.
So,
no, it's a MailChimp joke.
MailChimp.
You're not getting it. It's a MailChimp joke, and it was good.
It was good.
Hey, did you like a White House Down with Jason Clark?
No, it's not your turn.
Yeah,
David.
We're done with Jason Clark. We have reached the Jason Clark limit.
What number was
that, Aaron? I'm already losing track.
That was number 9 for me.
Okay, so
and
we're
Lawless
go right
was
back
only
to
watchable
8.
Because he was in it. So.
Oh yeah, you got to do 8.
Yeah.
Of course.
Now you're number 8.
Oh yeah. Jesus. So 8 for me was
that
the
was the most incredible stylistic decision you've ever made. You put that bottle in front of your face, and it looked like I was watching, like, a famous documentary. That was incredible. Did you guys see that?
No one knows what you're talking about.
I know the listeners will not know. He put a bottle. It like. It was perfect. That was
I'm
perfect.
Framing my webcam shots right now, so yeah. Back to my list. Number 8 was The Hateful Eight. So Tarantino, I'm a total mark for him, so anything he does, I'm going to love. This one was a fun movie. Didn't live up to my expectations, but still a very entertaining movie for me. I'm probably going to watch it again this weekend. So.
Did you see it in 70mm?
I sure did. Yeah. What were your expectations that didn't meet?
A little bit of story.
Yeah, a film with a plot, with like a
this
plot
was,
that's not
this
super
the worst Tarantino movie.
Whatever. Okay, so it too boring.
No,
it was a little straightforward. The mystery angle had zero mystery in it.
None.
That's true.
Yeah, the characters had no arc at all, except for one sheriff who kind of had one, not really. But yeah, so it kind of landed flat for me. But what do I know?
The worst
Tarantino movie is still better than most movies.
Exactly. Yes.
The worst Tarantino movie, really?
No.
Okay.
Yes. Pulp Fiction is definitely better than other movies.
I think he's perfected his craft. Pulp Fiction is like him almost perfect, and this movie is pretty close.
Are you joking?
I don't know. No, not at all. You'll see this up
high. You think this is better than Pulp?
All right. Yeah.
Okay.
Way to go, Bamort.
Do you think this is better than Glorious?
No. Okay. Inglourious will always be his best.
Yes.
Because Nazis and killing Hitler. But
oh,
it's
spoilers,
not his.
It's
still a little sloppy. I think that Inglourious is still a little sloppy. It's like he indulges himself. I don't think he indulges as much in this movie.
That's what this movie is. This is him indulging himself.
So, that's
I don't
funny.
Think so.
This is
that's
like
my main problem with it. Is it's
him
too indulgent.
Himself. This
too
is
indulgent.
Like,
on
this is Quentin
violence?
Like.
No,
on everything. On everything. To the point he's narrating himself.
He was pretty much like having a foot fetish on screen. Like, it was incredible. Like,
no, whatever.
It was great, but it was still like him indulging himself. Like, he's like, feet.
So,
yes,
so Aaron and
her.
I did a whole episode on it last night, and it was way more positive than we're making it sound here. Like, you should listen to it, but essentially, it's like great dialogue, great characters, vintage.
Who did
Tarantino.
A podcast? You guys did a podcast?
Yeah, it was posted.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's crank these out.
Yeah. So
David cranks these out.
Yeah, be careful with how you use the plural there, and guy.
Give him your money.
But I still liked it, but it's number 7 on my list of 10. Like, I don't like it better than Jackie Brown or the Kill Bills. I mean, it's close to Django, but certainly not Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, and then Inglourious, which is the top three for me. But anyway, I'm going to save
my argument for
later.
Yeah,
save your argument. We'll get to it soon, so. My number 8 was a huge shock to me. This is someone I've tried to support in their film career because I'm a big fan. And it's this directorial debut of Joel Edgerton, and that is The Gift.
Yeah!
Nice.
Yeah. The Gift was, like, so good.
Jason Bateman movie, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So Joel Edgerton also plays the antagonist in the film in a supporting role. He wrote and directed it. And this is a very Hitchcock-style thriller suspense film that goes to places that makes you very uncomfortable.
Yes, it really pushes
the boundary. And it coaxes, like, a good Jason Bateman performance that isn't just the regular good guy Jason Bateman, you know? This is a movie that completely shocked me. 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. It probably deserves to be higher.
It should be a 97.
Strongly
for
urge
sure.
people to go see this film. It's really good. That's all I'll say, since most people probably haven't seen it. But that's number 8 on my list.
Why did it not get so? Why did not a lot of people see it? I didn't see it either.
Jason
but
Bateman.
I heard so many good things about it.
I think it was independently made.
Yep. Yeah, it was financed in Australia. I think it was like a wide release, but like kind of a half wide release, right?
Maybe not a lot of marketing, because
not much marketing at all. Mm-hmm. And also, I don't know that it's the type of film that you could cut a trailer that would necessarily get people like put butts in the seats necessarily.
Yeah,
but it's sure. so well written and so well directed. Really good movie.
Oh. It's so great. And it made $43 million domestic. That's not terrible for a movie that cost $5 million.
That's way better than I was thinking.
It cost $5 million. Like, that's...
Yeah.
That's 4 times profit right there. Like, it's huge.
At least.
Well, because they didn't... Yeah, there's no marketing budget on this one.
Exactly.
All right, Skyler, you're number 8.
My number 8 is a movie that came out this year that was actually made and came out in 2015. It's a little film called Inside Out.
Whoa.
BS.
Wait, we didn't tell you to jump up to your top 3.
Whoa. Everybody,
8?
Take Jeez. Take a chill okay. pill.
Have some respect.
I didn't say anything about yours. I just showed my boobs. But everybody calm down. Inside Out was a great movie. However, last weekend... I saw a cut of the movie where they just took all the scenes where they weren't in the head, and it's like a 15-minute movie where it's just everything outside of the head. And I sat there watching it. I was like, I'm really enjoying this. And I was like, you know what? I don't know if it was like as great of a movie as I thought it was. Like, I really enjoyed it, but it was just number 8 for me. Like,
yeah, nothing happened on the outside. Never real stakes, which I think is a brave decision, because like, what does a little girl really do in her life that would be interesting? Well, nothing. It's just nothing. Her emotions are raw. Never mind. Okay.
Yeah.
I just accept your 8. Sorry.
No, I'm just thinking about like the, it kind of negates the whole idea of what her emotions are. I don't know. I was just thinking about it a lot. Like this idea that all of a sudden she's like walking up to a stairwell, like she's going to go down the stairrail, and then she stops and then she starts up again. I mean, she looks bipolar. By Amy Poehler. Am I right, guys?
Oh, no.
That's pretty good.
Oh, joy. Which, back to number 9 movie for Brian.
Yes. Well, number 8 movie for me. Oh, wait. That was my previous movie. I didn't mean to skip you, sorry.
No, that's it. Go, your turn.
Okay. Number 8. A movie starring Amy Schumer called Trainwreck. Which was really, everyone doesn't like that either.
Is that the LeBron James movie?
Popular. Yes.
LeBron James.
It was co-written and directed by Judd Apatow. It's Judd Apatow's 4th movie. I'm a sucker for all of his movies, even Funny People. And I think Trainwreck was surprisingly better than his other movies. And I think it's because he embraced... You're going to hate this, but the idea of a strong female character that does not have passive things acted upon her. So Trainwreck, another good example of women in movies making movies that are just
women
very
do
powerful.
It for themselves. Women do it for themselves.
I think that she didn't pull any punches in that movie. It was not dainty or cute at all, and that's not her. She's very forward about not being that. And I
was it
I
funny,
think,
though? I don't... I didn't
oh, it was
see
very
it,
funny.
So.
I thought it was hilarious. I thought that the sex scenes in that movie were some of the funniest sex scenes ever.
And some of the sexiest.
The gay innuendo from who's the wrestler? What's his name? Did you guys see this movie?
John Cena.
Not LeBron James. No, the other
it's John Cena,
multimillionaire.
Batista?
Athlete.
Is it Batista?
It's John Cena. I said it a bunch of times.
John Cena. Yeah. John
I
Cena.
You said Ultimate Warrior. No.
It's so funny. John Cena does a bunch of
The Rock,
undertone gay stuff that is just so funny. I thought really well done. I think the whole movie works. I think LeBron surprisingly good. I don't like LeBron at all actually, but
was
he does
the
pretty well. In the
was it Undertaker?
So. Anyways, Trainwreck.
That sounds like
I have a question. Yeah. Were the sex scenes funny because you couldn't actually believe that Bill Hader would have sex with Amy Schumer? Is that why they're funny?
You know? Okay.
Dude's been on SNL for 8 years. He's not that easy.
Bill Hader's a funny-looking guy, so I think that they picked a pretty appropriate-looking couple there. But
Brian, can I just have a quick question, like, conversation with you about feminist movies for a second?
No,
like,
no, yeah, no. Sure. You can't, because we got to get moving. Like, we got to get moving.
There's two kinds of feminist movies, though. There's, like, feminist movies that are, like, a feminist movie where the character could be a man, could be a woman. Like, it's not hitting you over the head with, like, hey, look, we're being a feminist movie.
Okay.
Like, sure. For example, Kill Bill. Mad Max Fury Road. Kill Bill.
Yes.
Like,
I agree.
But yeah, then you have two good examples. Then you have Trainwreck, where it's like, look over here, everybody, look over here, we're making a feminist movie. Like, oh, we switched the roles. She's the dude, he's the woman, look, ha ha ha. Which isn't that
I think in comedy it's harder, and so that she has to do a harder turn and saying, like, F your expectations. And that movie does a really good job of, like, no. Like, she doesn't become pretty, she doesn't stop being a crazy bitch. Like, she gets more bitchy. You know, I think that him, Bill Hader, being the passive kind of, like, not eye candy, but he's
beta
he's,
male. Just say
he's
it.
The post up, you know, and I think that that's a good role reversal. And in comedy, I think that that needs to be said, because too many people in comedy still live in a 30-year-old past. So I think, again, the movie is a good, fun movie to watch, but it also represents a larger movement. I think that we'll see more from her that we'll like. And I think she's a good writer.
Okay, one question. Are you saying Brian, Max
real quick,
comedy?
Hold on. No, to defend Brian, Skyler, you're making it sound a little bit like he just picked that Suffragette whatever movie.
I'm sure that's number six.
That's not. B-more, that's not on the list, is it?
No, it's not. Okay.
Like, Trainwreck's a good comedy. I did not see it, so I really can't judge it. But I would think its primary sin is just that Amy Schumer's not a funny person.
I disagree with that, but if you don't like her comedy, I think
no,
that
I,
a lot
I
of
like
it
her comedy. It's just that her comedy is dead comedians' jokes.
This is all the patriarchy trying to get you to buy into the fact that she's not funny. You don't have you ever
hook,
seen
hook, line, and sinker.
Like, her Live at the Apollo stuff is hilarious.
She stole that. She stole that from a dead comedian.
That was all
her best producer joke was the closer.
Yeah.
Says the patriarchy. Okay.
Oh,
says
not
the dead because
she's a
dead
woman.
Male comedians. Oh, she stole all this bit. You know how? Whatever. Okay.
Dead male comedians said nothing about it because they're dead.
Yeah, they did not make the jokes because, again, they're not. Women were not allowed to be comedians. 20
I'll just
years
say
ago.
This. I'll just say this, Brent. Women be shopping.
All right.
Women be
let's,
shopping.
Let's keep going. This
was,
might
was that a dark comedy
films?
Because LeBron James was in it?
So my next movie, number seven, right? Or seven?
LeBron James.
Is a movie, independent movie called It Follows.
Oh, good.
Which is an independent horror movie that I think the premise is generally that something that is following you and is a different person every time. And I think a novel idea for an independent movie, because they don't have a budget for a big bad, but very well done. The amazing score of this movie, the soundtrack is I think what makes it puts it over the top for me. I think also at the end of the movie, you're to understand it not really as horror and more as a statement about life, which I think is profound and well executed. So not just a cheap horror movie, a little bit broader about how you approach death, and death is always coming for you, so you might as well just hold hands and walk into the sunset. So go ahead.
Yeah.
That's my number seven.
Okay, so
now, were there some strong female characters in that one?
Also a strong female character who does not get acted upon. So go ahead.
Okay. My next movie is also a feminist highlight movie. Spotlight. You have a male acting upon a female a lot. Oh, nope. Well, that's the opposite of feminism. No. Man, I'm coming off as like a part of the patriarchy.
Yeah, what's the point of feminism, Skyler? Tell me.
Look, okay, my next couple movies are very
feminist.
Feminism.
You explain
this
as a man to me, what feminism is?
Dude, you don't They've mansplain won. Things to me, Brian. Don't mansplain things to me.
Yeah, okay.
Put your stilettos back on and just walk away.
Okay, yeah. Is Spotlight really your number seven?
Yeah.
Okay.
I really like
Spotlight. A little low for me.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, guys, because there's some movies in the top five that are really good.
Well, we'll be the judges.
You have to make room for Paddington. It's not easy.
Yeah, Shaun the Sheep and Paddington. Ugh. Okay.
No. No. Okay, Spotlight, it was a great narrative. Really well told. I feel like it's a story that could have been really boring, but they gave it a lot of life. It moved. It never felt stale. Performance is really good. Anything that has Stanley Tucci in it is getting bonus points, especially when he delivers a performance like he did.
The Tucci. Ruffalo
was great. Dude, I love the Tucci. Aaron, you get it. You get it. And, I thought Keaton was great. Tucci was great. That the chick from True Detective Season 2 was okay, I guess. But
stop. She was in Mean Girls. She's a good actress.
Sorry, Mean Girls 2. She's probably going to get an Oscar nom for it, actually. But
she should. She's really
is this the Boston movie? I don't think. I didn't see this, but I've heard.
It's the Boston movie. By the way, we're now an hour and 6 minutes in, and I definitely have to go to the bathroom.
Okay, motivation to, get off the feminist pedestal.
Okay, take a break. This is like Quentin Tarantino.
We're almost to break point. Let's keep going. All right, my number seven is a film that I actually reviewed with Aaron on an episode, and that is Sicario.
Yeah.
So low.
Too low. Yeah, but
okay, guys. I don't know. I'm looking at everything above it, and I just can't. There wasn't room. It ran into this brick wall of immovable movies, and we'll get to them. But Sicario is really, really, really good. I'm in this area. There's like four movies, probably the next three after this one, that all could be interchangeable. Like if you were to ask me in a week from now, you know, it could be two spots higher. They're all the parity between these next four picks is. It's so razor thin.
I don't think you saw enough movies this year, Skylar. Like, I don't think you can demonstrate a clear knowledge of all the movies that were released this year. No, wait. Just kidding. You have seen all of the movies.
I will voluntarily say that I didn't see enough movies this year. I don't even know what you guys are talking about half the time, so. I'm just going to sit here and nod.
All right.
Dude, I found this website where you can buy movies for really cheap. So if anybody wants a copy of Sicario, I can get it for you for like $3.99. iTunes, digital, cloud, Apple TV.
Go listen to our episode in Sicario if you want to hear more. It's really, really a great film. So, to Aaron, your number seven.
Yes, sir. Number seven, I have Ex Machina.
Oh,
yes.
So low.
I love this. Everyone's saying so low. There's no more room up there, guys.
Sure.
For me, Ex Machina was a fantastic film that felt like a 90-minute episode of The Twilight Zone, one of my favorite series of all time.
Yeah.
The writing was right. The writing, the characters, the look of the film was amazing. It's a finely crafted film. Alex Garland did a fantastic job writing and directing. Oscar Isaac was just dynamite as lead. Just a great, great movie all around. A nice little old-timey sci-fi film. Felt good. They don't really make movies like this anymore, unfortunately. This is the type of movie that is a thing of the past. These hard sci-fi is what they call it, I guess. But yeah, Ex Machina, loved it.
Great.
Fantastic twist at the end too.
I have a feeling we're gonna be talking quite a bit more about that.
Yeah,
let's jump
to
your last one for this first parter. Your number six.
Number six was Creed. So,
ooh.
Yeah, loved the Creed. And you know, it's interesting. There's a couple movies on my list here that have like kind of a mirror image that was released this year. For Creed, it was Southpaw, and for me, Southpaw just completely fell flat. I felt it was a boring by the numbers boxing movie that just flat out sucked. Whereas Creed could have gone the exact same way, but it just didn't. It kind of excelled where every place that Southpaw failed. I just loved Creed. I thought it was totally entertaining. I want to see it again. I only saw it the one time, but it's definitely a movie that was tops in 2015 for me.
Great. My number six is a movie I recently reviewed called Room.
Good choice.
It's a content matter that's hard to sell people on. Again, listen to the episode. To go more in depth, but an incredibly
what is the content matter? You've hinted at that a couple times, and I haven't looked it up.
It's referring to this. The premise is that it's a movie about a 17-year-old girl that gets kidnapped, and essentially a sex slave, and has a child, with the guy that kidnaps her, and she's locked into this shed. It's essentially a room. And the movie starts, she's already 5 years into this, and she has, you know, or she's 7 years into it, I think, and she has the five-year-old kid. And so she's raising this child to believe that this one room is all that there is in the world. And so the film starts off there, and then it goes to much bigger places, and it's heavy in content, but the film is told through the perspective of the five-year-old, this imaginative kid, that gives a very hopeful, really kind of moving spin on it. And it's really, really affecting. It's gut-wrenching to watch, but I think one of the most important films of the year, and it really, really affected me. So,
is it available in places besides the theater at this point?
It is not, no.
Okay. Yeah, Putlocker is where you can find it.
You can watch.
Yeah.
You can watch the sequel now, though, The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. If you like the original, you'll love The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
I watched an episode of that after I saw Room, and it's amazing how much differently I viewed it. It's almost like irresponsibly cheery.
It's so bad. It's so good. Like, I love Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, but wow, it took a really heavy subject matter.
Like, hey, it's not so bad.
All right.
It's John Hamm. What could he, you know, like?
Whoa, spoiler.
Who wouldn't want to be kidnapped by John Hamm? Yeah. I would be kidnapped by John Hamm.
Spoiler.
Grow out your hair. That's fine.
All right, Skyler, you're number six.
Yeah, I have Sicario at number six, which is way too low, I know, but man, those five movies ahead of it. No, Sicario, funny. Fantastic film. That's all that needs to be said about it right now. I loved it. Yeah. And it does have a really strong female character who's not getting acted upon. She's acting her own role. Second year in a row, we had a great Emily Blunt role.
Yeah.
She is fantastic.
She's the best.
Give me more of her.
She might be becoming, like, the best action female star in the world.
Or even ever, any gender. Yeah.
Maybe ever. So, yeah. Jim from The Office is a lucky guy.
He is.
Yeah. Gosh.
Did you hear that she said that she prefers him as being more flabby?
Oh, yeah, because he had to lose all that weight to be in Terminators.
Which I've never heard something that's, like, more deeply sexy than Emily Blunt saying that she prefers someone who's more flat. It's, like, awesome. That was marketed. Yeah, that was a marketing decision.
I wish
you
wouldn't have told me that.
Emily
that's
Blunt.
Not fair. That's not fair.
That's, yeah. It's just because she did not like that movie Jim was in.
Yeah, Michael Bay. Jeez. Yeah.
Benghazi.
Benghazi. Oh, what?
Oh,
a,
I thought it was
a
Bing Crosby biopic. Is that not?
Bing Crosby.
This is totally hijacked Skyler's own joke. All right.
That was
so
my joke like 6 months ago.
So finish us off, B-Mort.
At number six, I have Mad Max Fury Road, which, like you all said, there has to be movies in front of this movie, but I think I started this high on my list and it got, you know, boxed out. I actually saw this movie and did not like it at all. Went in with, I think, way too high expectations. But upon listening to the Brave Little Podcast, I think I changed my mind, went back and watched it and kind of stripped away some of my expectations. And it's incredible. The movie itself is, we would love to explain this universe to you, but we don't have time. And the whole movie is, we don't have time. We gotta go. And I think that that push is something that too many action movies are willing to completely ignore, which is if you just keep going, you don't have to explain a lot, and the audience will put its explanation into their own heads. And I think that's where a lot of the power of the movie lies. I will say that this one is definitely has feminist undertones, and I think that well executed by Charlize Theron, and I think choosing to make him the secondary character is pretty brave. It's called Mad Max Fury Road, but it really is just about Furiosa, and Mad Max is there. Going back and watching this movie from a cinematography perspective was pretty impressive as well, because when I originally watched it, I didn't know that he frames every action in the shot at the center, and upon watching it again, that held up. So, love this movie. Wish it could have been higher, but loved it.
They'll teach this in film school, right? Like, this will be film school stuff.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is why it's kind of hard to put it that low. But I think some of what it suffers from is overhype, which is every nerd I knew said that it was the greatest thing they'd ever seen. So
that was me.
So
wait, am I a nerd?
That's a wrap for part one of the top 10. We're gonna take a quick break here.
Hold on to your butt. Oh, sorry. So, yeah.
What I'm gonna do though is I actually asked people to submit audio recordings of their favorite film of 2015. Some people gave me their top five. Some people gave top 10. Or just the one. And so I've put together a little bit of a montage of everyone that submitted so you can hear a variety of different opinions, which it's been fun listening to all of them as they've come in. So we're going to play that now as kind of the outro, and then we'll be right back on for part two.
My favorite movie for 2015 would have to be Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
My top movie for 2015 was Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens / Rey's Adventure. Because it was the only one I was willing to pay full price to see in the movie theaters twice.
My favorite movie of the year 2015 was Steve Jobs.
My favorite film of 2015 was Steve Jobs. My meh movie of 2015 was definitely Spectre.
Hey, what's up, Brave Little Podcast? All right, here's my top 10 for the year. Number 10, I chose Room, a pretty brutal movie like you guys talked about, but that's a great one. Number 9, Creed. Number 8, Steve Jobs. Number 7, Ex Machina. Number 6, The Hateful Eight. Number 5, Sicario. Number 4, Spotlight. Number 3, Star Wars. Number 2, Inside Out, and number 1, Mad Max Fury Road. Mad Max is probably the best time I've had at the theater all year, maybe my whole life. Love that movie. But all good movies. See you guys.
Star Wars, The Force Awakens. Yep, that was my favorite. I loved it. I loved all the new characters. I loved the old characters. I loved the dialogue. I loved everything about it.
Yo, what's up, dude? It's me, Mike. A retake remix!
First off, shout out to Paul Blart. I'm gonna miss him. He was a great actor, and he was a great part of the Fast franchise. Star Wars, blah, blah, blah. My number one film for this year... Jupiter Ascending, visually, that was so freaking dope. I literally teared up on it, and I just thought to myself, this is a great film. Mad Max, Fury Road. Blue.
I would say The Martian had to be one of the most entertaining movies of the whole year. Also, Mission Impossible Rogue. That was a really fun movie.
Hey, Brave Little Podcast, it's one of your loyal listeners, Nate Farr. The Force Awakens came out in 2015, and that is easily the best movie of 2015. I have not had as much fun as I had watching that movie as I've had watching any movie in a very long time, and it was one of the best theater experiences ever. And since you guys called me out last couple podcasts about what I said, I'm going to just double down and say it is the best Star Wars movie. I would rather watch Poe, Finn, and Rey over Luke, Leia, and Han any day.
Hey, Brave Little Pod. This is Rhett coming to you from Chicago, Illinois. Just wanted to give my love to Inside Out as my favorite movie of 2015. I'm a huge Disney fan, and Inside Out not only was a feel-good movie of the year, but the feel-everything movie of the year. I just love how it touched on so many levels that not many movies can do that. It was really hard to pick just one, so I'll just quickly run through a list of, like, the movies that I thought stood out to me this year. Star Wars, of course, Jurassic World, Mad Max, Ex Machina, Dope. I highly recommend that one. Not many people heard of that one. Meet Earl and the Dying Girl, The Final Girls, Creed, The Big Short, Hateful Eight, The Martian, The Peanuts movie was surprisingly good, and Mission Impossible 5. So that will do it for me from Chicago, Illinois, and over and out.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.